accession number 20885, reel 3.
Tom Cook, reel 3.
Right. We were in the middle of this field, as I say. I was the forward section, and we didn't bother to dig in. But I remember it started to rain, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained. It was awful. And despite this rain, all we had to cover ourselves were our gas masks. And I mean, the gas masks were useless as camouflage because they reflected the light. So we had nothing to eat. We had no need to eat since our wasted meal. So we the next morning, well, dawn came eventually, and we're expecting the Germans to come up this road across the canal. And the next morning, we're given a tin of herring. I hate herring. I've never touched herring since. Well, I was hungry. We're hungry. And then I went to see the colonel, who was in with the motor transport in the next field, and I said, was there any possibility of me trying to find my unit and my section? In the meantime, we'd lost the regimental quartermaster sergeant to the pay sergeant, because they were in a truck, and they disappeared. So the colonel said, well, I appreciate this, but he said, don't need any point at all. We really don't know what's happening. I don't know where your unit is. You just better stay with us. At least you've got the protection of the battalion. And that was that. So we laid there for the rest of the day. And then, it must have been about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're told to pack up and start moving. So we packed everything, assembled our stuff, and started moving on the road and started walking along. And as we're walking along, I said to the officer, well, we started walking, right? And there were my section and then alternate sections each side of the road, you see. And I happened to look back and there must have been a mile of men behind me, walking along, alternate sections. So I said to an officer, what's happening? He said, oh, we're going back to Dunkirk. So I said, well, what are we going to Dunkirk for? He said, I'm going back home, I hope, he said. And I thought, well, this is it. We'd been told that we're probably pulled out and re-embarked somewhere further south, you see. So we marched and marched to we're taking all the back roads. We arrived at one place which was clogged with traffic, so we were all separated, and eventually I finished up with another crowd. We were finished up with another crowd, and we had a train, got into a truck, and then the truck stopped because there was a horrible traffic jams and things, because the MPs are the real heroes of Dunkirk, because you go along the road and the MPs would be there and say, look any further. They were stopping people going towards the Germans. So the MPs, I thought, they disliked them. They did a very good job. Then, what happened then? We spent that night in the truck. Then somebody said there was a bombing. There was something coming. We all piled out and some of us jumped into the ditch which had water in. And then we set off again at dawn, marching. Just my section. I mean, I'd lost one or two of them by then. I don't know where they'd got to. And we marched through to the road and then crossed over the bridge and went into Bredune. When we got to the bridge, we'd had these trucks which had stuff in, and we'd found the trucks wouldn't be allowed to go any further. They were being destroyed, whipped into the fields and being burnt and destroyed. And I think some of them had pickaxe put through them. The engine smashed up, that sort of thing. And there were fires about, they're setting fire to the things. So, but anything, if you had ammunition, I think the truck was allowed across the bridge. So we set up, went across the bridge and down the road to Bray Dunes. And we still didn't know exactly what was happening. I mean, there was no information passed. Bearing in mind, I was on my own as a section, that there was no communication from anywhere. It wasn't like the platoon officer or the company commander being able to tell me anything. So we just making your own way out. And as we walked into the suburbs of Bray Dunes, suddenly there was a... of course, it's a Stuka dive bomber. They had these whistles fitted onto the wings, onto the tail of the wings anyhow, diving down. And I started running, and I was passed by a captain. It must have been... Olympic runner, because I could run. Anyhow, we dived into a shelter, and I remember I dived to one place and there were some dead soldiers there. God, it's horrible. But I think you're actually conscious of anything there. You're so frightened, I suppose, really. And then we made our way down to the beach, by which time there were about six of us left. And it must have been Bray Dunes, because I think that day, the 31st, was La Panne was being shelled. So I was saying it might be La Panne, but it was Bray Dunes. La Panne was being shelled, so Bray Dunes. And there was one attack, one bombing attack, which was nowhere near us. But there were somebody, obviously people hurt, because you could see them be rushing over towards them. And then I said this, and it was a beautiful day. And the water was perfect. The tide was well out. And you could see, as you came under the front, there was a British destroyer, and there was a paddle steamer of some kind. I think it was the Waverley, actually. And two or three other ships, and some wrecks. But and Dunkirk over to the left with a huge pillar of fire and of cloud and smoke burning up. All we had to eat was a tin of bacon. Tinned bacon, and so I said, "We need some water. I'm going for some water. You chaps stay here." So the taffy, the shoemaker, came with me. So I went back up to the buildings across the beach. We're about probably 100 yards onto the beach. You know, it's a long sloping beach there. And we went back up to the promenade and into some of the hotels and houses. And there's no water. The toilets were full. There were some French soldiers just drinking. Some British soldiers drinking. Nothing violent, anything violent or anything. They were just drinking and fed up to the teeth. I wonder how many of those went into the bag. Anyhow, there's no question of water because the water had been knocked off. There was no fresh. So I went back to the beach, and the lads and others had disappeared. So I think they'd probably been told, you know, to get onto any boat they could. It was not quite of an organised unit. You could hear people saying, you know, 6th Battalion here, 5th Battalion, whatever it was, Cheshire's or whatever it was, trying to line people up. But there were units that had got back together. Now, the 1st 7th Queen's arrived practically complete as a unit. I mean, they were a cohesive force, but we were just scattered bits and pieces. And there were quite a lot of us, I mean, just loose bonds, odd bonds. And, of course, by this time, it was mostly infantry and artillery, a few tank people, because most of the service corps and people like service people had, you know, administrative people had been taken back. So we drove. I didn't know what to do, so I said to Taffy, "What's doing? He's messing around, Taffy. Come on, we'll go off." So we waded into the water, and Taffy couldn't swim. We took our boots off, of course. That we'd been told by a naval officer, "Take your boots off, in any case, and drop them if you have to." He said, obviously, you can't walk with boots in water. So there were quite a few naval officers there doing things. I mean, they did a super job. So we waded out, and water was about up to our chest, I should think, and Taffy was really concerned. Anyhow, the landing craft, which I'd never seen one before, with a ramp down, a small one. So I took him over and pushed Taffy onto the landing craft. And then it moved away, because, I mean, there was time, as I said. So I thought, well, I can't get on. You know, it was going up and down a bit too high. So I moved over to another boat and got in, and we were taken out to a ship, a ferry, a paddle steamer, and this was the Waverley. For a long time I was under the impression it was the Gracie Fields, which is the famous one to go down, but this was the Waverley, and of course I was soaked, so we eventually managed to get onto the Waverley. They collected all our emergency rations, that's the little chocolate packs we had, to try and make up some food, and all the ammunition to supply the defence, machine guns, defence. And we eventually set off. And suddenly we had thump, 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 and a plane had dived out of the clouds and dropped bombs nearby, trying to hit us and missed us. And that was that. And then shortly afterwards, I'd taken my trousers off and dried them on a... It's a beautiful afternoon. It's a beautiful day, really. Absolutely magnificent. Perfect bombing weather, I suppose. And I would take my trousers off to dry them. And I'd just put them back on, and the other things were off. And suddenly there was this colossal crash. The next thing I remember was in the water. And the ship was Well, eventually I could swim a bit. I wasn't a very good swimmer, but I could swim. Lots of chaps couldn't swim, anyhow. And there were, the ship was sort of going down, and there were odd caskets, odd boxes and things floating around. And some of them were these things they had on ferries before there were paddle steamers for rescue, like floating, you know, buoyant boxes and things. And so we hung onto one of those. And eventually, I was picked up by a Grimsby trawler.
How did you fare in the sea?
Oh, not too bad. It wasn't too cold. We hung on to this thing, and we weren't very long in the water, actually. Funny enough, about that time, my mother was seeing a spiritualist meeting in Hull, and the woman had said, she was rubbing her hands like my grandmother, you say, oh, somebody has a son. There's somebody called Tommy. Actually, my mother actually said this, and he said, he's all right, he's in the water, but he's all right. It's a matter of interpretation, isn't it? So, anyhow, so next I was in probably water. It's difficult to say, because, I mean, I had a watch, but it had stopped in the water, I mean, it wasn't a waterproof thing, so I really wouldn't know. Probably half an hour at the outside of that. Because, I mean, there were ships, a lot of ships rescuing. So we were picked up by this Grimsby trawler. It had a little dinghy float walk going around picking us up. And we set off, and then we hadn't gone very far. And of course, the ships had got separate. I mean, they all made their own way. And I don't know what happened to this Grimsby trawler. He can't have had any maps or anything. But he was heading towards Dover, apparently. Well, as it transpired, he wasn't going to Dover. He might have thought he was. But we found an RAF plane, a Ranson, floating in the water. And the other Ranson was a wooden plane, you know, with one gun, machine gun. It was a training plane, really. And that had been shot down or run out of fuel, and we picked the crew up. And then there was a motorboat there which they took, decided to tow, and to save the butt of fuel. And then down mid, about 3 o'clock in the morning, we ran ashore on the Goodwin Sands. The tide was coming in, fortunately. So they couldn't pull us on. The motorboat wasn't strong enough to pull us off. So we eventually were floated off and came into Ramsgate. And we just came alongside the quay. And then eventually we disembarked, and there were WVS and people like that giving us socks and shoes and slippers, that sort of thing, shirts. But as I came back with actually nothing.
What condition were you in?
Oh, well, I didn't mean hurt at all. I mean, I wouldn't mean, no, I wouldn't mean fizzy. I wasn't, I don't know. Well, I suppose I was not young and fit. I mean, I was only 19, damn it. I don't remember being ever feeling excessively tired in all this. I was good at walking. I could march and walk, so I think I felt too badly. You know, there were people who were hurt, of course. They were looking after them. Anyhow, we walked along to the end of the jetty, and then I'm trying to forget how we got to the station. We're taken to the station. There were all the WVSS, Salvation Army, all these people giving us sandwiches and socks and all sorts of things. And we got to the station, and they were put into the train. I remember in my compartment, there were two fellas with packs full of cigarettes. Bone dry, these boys were. Packs of cigarettes looted from the old naffy or whatever. So off we set to where we came through. They took us round through Caterham. That's interesting. A friend of mine is a railway expert, and he had no idea Caterham was operating then. But of course, the railways did a fantastic job, Dunkirk. Unbelievable. I mean, they took us by different routes all over the country. And we came through Caterham, I remember, and we stopped and got off. We were given sandwiches. And, of course, that was the guards depot. And there was a guards officer, a colonel, Lieutenant Colonel, I think, saying what was it like. And, of course, I said, oh, pretty bad, you know, the bombers and things. And Charlie, we didn't see any RAF. I said, oh, I'm sure there was somewhere. Anyhow, they gave us some sandwiches, and off we set. Oh, we're allowed to send a telegram, which my mother, I don't think my mother ever received. Because, as far as I know, my mother at that time, and been reported missing, you see. The entry in the regimental war diary is that the regimental quartermaster sergeant and 11 other ranks failed to report. Didn't say they'd left us behind, failed to report. That was very anti, I must say. Anyhow, So we finished up, went through London, and people chalked up, well done, boys, you know, well done and welcome back. As we went through, I don't know which way we went through London, but we had finished up in Worcester Barracks. And we finished up a place called Norton, which is the Worcester Regiment's barracks, and the Norton Railway Station. We got out, and you could see that these Worcesters who hadn't been there, and there were lots of few regulars, and they were going to sort us out, because we were pretty well disciplined by this. We weren't even real soldiers, were we? So they marshalled us into some sort of order, and the band struck up, and off they set, and we're a real bullshit lot. I mean, some of the chaps were really fed up to the teeth. And we're driving along, and suddenly we heard a, and every one of us dived into the nearest shelter and left the band marching on their own. It was, oh dear, it was a scream. And of course it was these American, what they call them, Texans, these training planes sounded just like a Stuka. So we arrived at Norton Barracks and were fed, and for a day or so we were just left alone. They didn't know what to do with us. I remember my first shave. Oh, I didn't shave very much. I'd hardly shaved, you know, once every two or three days then, but I hadn't shaved for, 10 days by then. So I remember cold water getting that flesh. It was awful. Well, I was sitting in the middle of a field. The weather was marvellous. Sitting in the field on the second day, I think, and writing a letter to my mother. And my mother got the letter before she got the telegram saying I'd arrived safely. My letter in the post. And as we were writing, a bunch of us writing, suddenly we went, and we all started rushing towards the edge. That was it. Anyhow, I remember that the entertainment at the barracks that week was Huey Green. With his, his team, his band. Right, then Norton Barracks. Well, eventually they sorted us out and, you know, let us know, found out what units were there. Well, by that time I was only with the East Yorks there, you see. On the Sunday, we decided to go to church. So four of us set off to go to church, and we weren't allowed out the gate, so we went out the side entrance. You know, we just climbed over the wall and went out. About 5 minutes, walking on quite reasonably towards the church, towards Worcester. And suddenly a staff car pulls up alongside us. A very charming major gets out and he said, gentlemen, I'm sorry, I have to ask you to return. You're not supposed to be out. And I said, well, we're going to church service. We're not going anywhere else. There's no shops open. We'd like to go to church. He said, I'm very sorry, I must ask you to come back. They didn't bust us around. They were very few. So in the end we decided we'd better do as he told us. I mean, we didn't want to. I mean, none of us. I mean, it's a bit funny thing. Generally speaking, people who went to church voluntarily were reasonable people. In general, I said. So we went back and then shortly afterwards I was ordered to join my unit down in Cornwall, at Launceston in Cornwall. And we were there, of course, when the French fell. Incidentally, I didn't get any apologies from anybody for leaving us behind. But I don't think we lost many men. The strange thing is, we lost the only Jewish lad we had in the battalion at Dunkirk. A nice little fella. Nice little chap. Most inoffensive fella. And he's buried, actually, at Dunkirk Cemetery. So that was more or less that. That was these shocks. Then after that, I went home on leave to Hull. And of course, Hull was being bombed fairly frequently. And they arrived that night, and my father said, oh, they only come to get you. That's it. So I managed to get up to sit down to see my sister, who was in the hospital in Boston, in Lincolnshire. And then I back to Dorset, to Wimborne. And then we were put on beach guard. We were guarding the beach at Studland Bay.
With the 5th East Yorkshire.
For the invasion. Pardon?
With the 5th East Yorkshire.
With the 5th East Yorkshire, yes. And I was really fed up. I mean, I was homesick. It's a strange thing to say, but I think I was actually homesick. So I went to, there was a circular came round asking for clerical staff for the service corps. So I thought, well, since these jokes didn't seem to want me in France, I don't know why they wanted me here. So I applied. And the quartermaster was very upset, John Scott. Incidentally, John Scott, the quartermaster, got a George Medal subsequently, and I think it's something to do with the whole raids. But I haven't found out why. I've been trying to track the entry down, but I think I know he got a George Medal. And anyhow, we were on beach defence. They threw me out of the stores, so I was back to the infantry again, you see. And I had a section, a special section of platoon of tank hunting. Our job was to go out and stop tanks and say, here, and shoot them, you see. And we were given bicycles to tour around. And I was on beach defence. We're in tents, just living in tents, just behind the beach. And the beach was very similar to the beach at Normandy, where these ships went ashore. And not such a long bit, not such a long low tide, not such a wide stretch of sand at low tide as there, but very similar. There were sort of sandy hills and tufts of grass and things, and we had to dig slit trenches. We dug slit trenches and camouflage them. And I have a photograph of myself, and there's a big, tough, fiddle. So we had to stand to just before dawn, and then we had and then we'd pack up and go back and have breakfast, and then we'd go off to for food in sections, leaving somebody on guard, you see. So they weren't anticipating anything during the day, but it was mostly maintenance of the slit trenches and keeping the thing tidy. And every morning one of our majors, Major Percival, who was a pilot, would fly a Lysander over the beach and check for the camouflage, and if your camouflage wasn't up to scratch, you got a big rocket to really chase. So our platoon officer was a man called Wilkie, an ex-guards sergeant, and he was a terrible man. He used to get very drunk, and one of his favourite tricks was to go and sleep up behind the guards, just behind the, away from us, where we were, was a guard defending a guard on patrol, and he'd sleep behind it and grab his rifle, and then put him on a charge for not being in possession of his rifle. And the regimental sergeant major heard about this, and as you know, the regimental sergeant major really has authority over the officers. I mean, technically he has, isn't he? But of course, he's the first man the colonel looks to. And eventually, the story is Mr. Wilkie got drunk in pool in Swanage, and somewhere or other, I think, stole a car. The story was that he'd injured an old lady or something with a vehicle, and that was his that was him. But I know he went. I don't know where he went to. Anyhow, that was beach defence. And then, of course, the famous night when the alarm went out in September, and I was on the telephone from the phone at our store's headquarters, ready to relay any messages. And then just that, nothing really happened, nothing happened. But a couple of nights later, there were some German planes came over. They must have been unloading their stuff, because they dropped a lot of incendiary bombs on the land, Studland, Poole Harbour, Studland, just the Swanage side of Poole, and it caught, all the gorse caught fire, very tinder dry, absolutely tinder dry, caught fire, and they were fighting the fires. The whole battalion was out fighting the fire, and they weren't getting very far, I'm afraid. They were, and the vicar was there out with everybody else, and he said, right, we'll do something else, we'll try everything else, let's try this. They all they started to pray, you see. They all prayed. Within 2 hours, it bucketed with rain. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Anyhow, that was that. Then we moved back to Poole. Since the invasion scare was more or less over, we moved back to Poole. Oh, by the way, we did find a couple of bodies, German soldiers' bodies floating around the old town. I personally didn't see it, but there was one of the sectors picked up. They know that the British planes had bombed German practices, and some of the bodies had floated over. But it wasn't an invasion as such. And we moved back to Poole Harbour, to Poole itself, to concentrate. And then this was the incident when I went out for a pub called the Jolly Sailor, which was a real low dive. I remember they had a pianist there, Lassie, a real gangster's moll, played the piano. She was a super pianist, cigarette in the corner of her mouth and playing away. And I didn't drink beer. I'm a bit of a prig, I suppose. I didn't drink alcohol at all. I just couldn't, I had headaches, I couldn't take it. So, I was there with a couple of chaps, and I was drinking grapefruit or something, and there was a fight started. I said, hell with this, and I was getting out, and I shot out the back door. Just out the back door, I was grabbed by a military police corporal. Christ. Got you. Christ, it's Tom Cook. And this was Bert Dunn, my skipper from, form skipper from school, my rugby skipper after the war. Bert Dunn, his father, his brother Charlie Dunn, was the Vicar of Heddon. Subsequently, anyhow, Bert Dunn, come on, you better shove off. Come on, off you go. So I went off, and that was that. That was it. And I got away. And then another night, when I was looking after the stores, where we had the butchery, I had a noise and found one of the battalion lads trying to burgle the post. Well, I grabbed him and had him for a while, but he got away because I was trying to get his boots and he got away. I identified him subsequently to parade the next day, but all his pals swore he'd never left the barracks, so that was that. This went on. There was a story that whilst we were in Poole on parade, a young lady appeared with a baby looking for a lance corporal. Right? Do you know what the pity was? She actually got him because he'd been just posted, he'd been there before and been posted back to the battalion. Oh well, poor chap. Anyhow, it was a lot of good stories. Whether they're all true or not, I don't know. Then from Poole we were sent to up to Midsummer Norton in Somerset to get it ready for going overseas, actually, and the Middle East. And this is where my posting came through, to go to the service corps. So that was the end of my connection with East Yorks. That's more or less the end of the chapter of that section. Now, you don't want to know what else I did.
Please. Yeah.
No, you don't want to know,
would.
Do you?
Yes.
Well, I was transferred to the service corps. I was sent down to Guildford on a course, and my shorthand typing and bookkeeping was superior to any of the instructors. I mean, I'd come from a firm with the highest reputation there was. And went up north on the train. Train journeys were terrible in those days. And I was very pally with a Cockney lad. And, by the way, from Guildford, you could see the bombing of London. It was really, really, I mean, oh, you see a glow in the sky the whole time. Anyhow, from Guildford, we went up north, and we got to Carlisle. And I shot at her. I said, I'm going to get a drink. Oh, the train was blacked out, the station was blacked out. I said, there'd be something at the canteen. There might be a cup of tea or something. What do you want? He said, I'll have a pile oil. I never had one of these. I'm drinking, you see. So I went in and said to the girl, I'd like a lemonade and a pile oil. She said, what's a pile oil? I said, I don't know. That's what he said. So he said, well, I'd better have a bottle of beer. It was a pale ale, of course. Man, nowadays, it wouldn't matter. But then, being a Yorkshire, I have no idea, you know, other people's thing, other people's diction. Anyhow, we got to Glasgow, to a barracks in Barrhead. And after a while, there was we were just hanging around waiting for to be posted. You see, about 120 of us altogether waiting to be posted, and we went out and were ordered back. We're ordered back to barracks. We had to be back. We were allowed to go, but we had to be back by 6 o'clock one evening, one Sunday evening, and we all went back. And the idea was they were looking for two special posts, so they interviewed us all. The officer interviewed us all, and I remember the officer with me put 5 stars alongside me. You see. And then I was on the shortlist, 30. Then I was on the shortlist of 20. Then I was on the shortlist of 5. Then I got the job. Right? And this was a special post. There were two of us selected. And it turned out that the post was for the Governor of Gibraltar, Secretary, and the other was the Secretary of the Adjutant General. And though they said at the time that they would prefer me to go to the Adjutant General, because I was single, the other chap was married, they were sending me abroad. That was that. Now, whether I knew at the time, let me say this, I'm not quite certain at the time I knew it was going to be the Governor of Gibraltar. But the Governor of the Gibraltar at that time wasn't Lord Gort. When I went to